back to the Homeschool Conversation podcast, where we talk all things homeschool. On this episode today, I have Miss Megan Jackson, and she is a working homeschool mom that's here to touch on some of these very popular and important questions about balancing homeschooling with working and how you can run a business and just all these topics that I think a lot of moms would be encouraged to hear. So welcome to the show, Megan.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I know. I know that you also love homeschooling and love talking about it. So I'm really excited to pick your brain a little bit about how you are pulling this off. So if you don't mind telling us about what your current journey is with homeschooling, how long you have been homeschooling, and how old your kids are, just so that the listeners get an idea of if they can relate to you and if they just share anything in common with you.
So I actually started off as a teacher, but when I had my first child, I fell in love with him and thought to myself, why am I spending all day with other people's kids and somebody else has my kid, and this just doesn't make sense. And that began the journey of me looking to stay at home more. And then I knew a few homeschoolers, so my oldest was really sensitive, and I just knew kindergarten was going to be too much for him. So we thought, oh, we'll just start with kindergarten because it's optional where we are. And he's never been there. He's never been back. He's never been to school. I think he was in daycare for like 2 months, and that was it.
It's funny that you say that, because that was the straw that broke the camel's back for me too. It was, my son went to kindergarten and I felt the same way that other people were getting to spend more time with my own kid. And he said to me one day, like, he called me by his teacher's name by accident. And I was like, did you just call me your teacher's name? Like, instead of calling me mom, you called me like Mrs. whatever her name was. And he was like, well, yeah, mom, I do spend like a million hours more a day with her than you. And like, my mom heart just broke. And I was like, you know, it's so true that the teachers in schools are getting to spend a lot of time. They're spending 8 hours a day times 5 days a week. That's 40 hours that they get to be experiencing all the joyful ups and downs of learning with your kids. So I love that you noticed that for yourself, that you were getting to experience that. And so then what happened? What did you end up, what was the straw that broke the camel's back for you, that you decided, was it that day that you went to kindergarten that he went?
He actually never went to kindergarten. It was when I went back from maternity leave, and I was with all these other kids, and I thought, this is crazy. And my school at the time didn't have a part-time position for me to at least spend more time at home. So then I quit, and I thought, well, we'll just see how it goes. He's 12, and he's none of my boys. I have a 12-year-old, a 10-year-old, and an almost 5-year-old, and they've never been to school. So Wow. We've just had them home. Every year we reassess how things are going, but I think we're just in it for the long haul.
Yeah. So how was that first year for you as a teacher? Did you feel like you were super prepared and it was going to be easy for you? And did you have less skepticism from your family because you were a teacher? Or did you still experience people like, are you sure you should do that? Are you screwing up your kids? Like, did you get any of that?
Yes. So,
wow, I'm shocked. Yeah. So you'd think that people are like, I think I know what I'm doing here.
No, it wasn't a question of, was I capable? Because I have a teaching degree and an engineering degree. So it wasn't a question of my ability. It was more, is this even a good idea for kids in general?
I see.
And it was mostly my immediate family that had the biggest concerns. I think my in-laws were very open to the idea. And my husband, the more he got to see, now he works in maintenance in the schools. So the more he's in the schools and seeing what's happening there, and then he comes home, he's like, no, I'm your biggest advocate. I want them at home. I think you're doing an amazing job. So he's my biggest supporter. And then since then, I've found a tribe of other homeschoolers around me. So yeah, there is a lot of people that don't agree, but I think, And it made me question a lot of the time, especially when we were having some struggles. But ultimately, they're my kids, and it's our family and what we value, not them.
Right. And I always think it's so ironic the way us as moms, when we do have a struggle in homeschooling, we automatically start questioning what we're doing. But I think when our kids are struggling in school, we don't even do that. We're kind of like, well, it's the teacher's job to figure that out, or maybe I'll get him a tutor, or I'll outsource this problem as much as possible. But we never blame ourselves when our kids are in school, and taking that responsibility onto our shoulders, I don't know, it seems to come with a lot of self-doubt, some anxiety, a lot of questioning. And I used to think that was horrible, and I used to want to tell moms, like, don't be anxious, don't question yourself. But now I'm like, you know what, maybe in the process of questioning yourself and going through the struggles, you actually grow and start to learn, like, what's working, what's not working. And that's not a bad thing. You know, I think that's awesome that you push through some of those struggles. And how many years have you been homeschooling now?
So my oldest is 12, and he's never been to school. And I don't know, like, they're lifelong learners. They just started learning, and I didn't say, okay, officially now we're going to start schooling. We just kept going with life. We've tried lots of different methods too.
Yeah, that was my question. I was going to ask you, are you guys mostly unschoolers, or I know you said something about the Waldorf approach that you had tried that, and I don't know a lot about that. So yeah, any methods that you know and have tried or liked or disliked, I'd love to hear your input about that, since you've been basically doing this for the last 7 years, it sounds like.
Yeah. So what, as a teacher, when I first started, my poor little baby, I was like, all right, I'm in this. Let's do lap books. Let's print and laminate. And I, like, poor kid, he was like overwhelmed by all these little things I found on Pinterest. So I originally, in my teacher mindset, thought you just do school at home. And kindly, I got into some different groups and homeschoolers, and you know, you hear about different books to read. And I think I read You Are Your Child's First Teacher by Rahima Baldwin and some of John Holt. And then I thought, wow, you got to think outside of the box. There's more ways to actually, there were more methods that I didn't even know about. So mm-hmm. I started digging into some of these other methods, and Waldorf really spoke to me. The reason is because it's very holistic. And it has the developmental stages of the children, like when to introduce certain topics. Because around us, when they got rid of grade 13, they just bumped all the curriculum down a grade without thinking of why. So now kids in JK are required to read and write. And it's like Waldorf actually thought about what the kids are going through and what they should be learning or what would be best for them. They have delayed academics. So the kindergarten years are very similar to, say, Montessori or Charlotte Mason. It's all nature, outdoor play, stories, that kind of thing. And that worked really, really well for my boys that were big into the outdoors and just playing. And I wanted to delay the academic part for them. The other thing that really spoke to me was an emphasis on handicrafts, because I'm all over that. I'm like knitting, crafting. I was like, you're telling me to do this? All right. I'm all over that.
I get to enjoy learning and teaching. I get to actually enjoy it and not dread it. What?
So that worked perfect for the younger grades. And at the time I was also doing a daycare. So that was like a selling point for everybody. And I could just do all of them, kindergarten, story time, circle time, everybody at the same time. It's when my son hit sort of grade one-ish, he did not like the teacher-directed approach. All of a sudden, there was like this big shift from playtime to, okay, sit down, now I'm going to teach you stuff. And he's like, no, I don't want that. And he resisted a lot. And I happened to get in with some friends who were unschoolers. And I read a lot about project-based homeschooling. So that's sort of unschooling, but a little more directed. The child leads it. They have an idea of a project they want to work on. And then it was a bit more directed, as in I scheduled some more time on it, and I found more of the resources because he was younger. He didn't know how to find any of that.
Right.
And then we jumped into total unschooling for a couple years. And then I had a series, we just went through a really hard time as a family. I had a second miscarriage. We had a baby. And we were struggling in our parenting. And then it kind of turned into total neglect. Like, it wasn't unschooling. There was nothing happening. and that wasn't working for us. So then now I would say we're an eclectic mix. We do a lot. The children have a lot of say in what we do. They help me choose the curriculum that we're going to do. So I'll show them the programs that we're going to work with. But they do know that for our comfort as parents, we would like to make sure they're doing some math, some English type, you know, reading or writing. And then they pick their units. And that's the fun part for them. So I survey them several times a year and I say, what do you guys want to learn over the next few months?
How awesome is that?
And then they'll tell me the topics and then I'll go on Pinterest and find this and just make my own units.
Yeah.
And we kind of try to do that together. And some months I try to give them their own choices, but then that tends to be a lot more work.
I was going to ask you, what do they end up picking? Or do you remember the first time you did a unit study and it actually worked and you realized, like, hey, they're learning? Do you remember what the topic was?
Oh my gosh. Sometimes I've chosen ones that I don't know. I look through the curriculum and I'm like, we're going to do this. We really loved the medieval unit. Because we had like a tournament and a feast and we made weapons and it was like totally into that. Harry Potter unit was so much fun because it was right at Halloween. So I got lots of cool stuff and we threw a party and invited friends. So it's when we can do like a lot of hands-on and building and then throw a party and invite our friends into the learning.
I mean, you never would forget that. That's like the type of stuff that your kids will talk about when they are 45, 50, 60 years old. Like, I remember when we learned about the medieval times and we did this part. I mean, those are the things that actually stick in your memory. I mean, I feel like that's true for me too. If I think back to my public school education, I remember so much more all those like special times that we did get to do a project like that where I had to present something to the class. I still remember like the topic that I and all the work I put into presenting it, and it's just like so awesome that you did a party school. It's actually a thing. Julie Bogart, I don't know if you've ever heard of her.
Yes, I love her. I'm interviewing her next week. Yes.
Oh my! I interviewed her a few weeks ago. She's just as awesome on podcasts as she is on her podcast. She's just like not even a scripted person. She's just like open and go, ready to share her wisdom. So she has this episode about party schooling. Did you hear it before?
I need to go back and listen.
Oh, it says it's called Permission to Party School. And for any of our listeners right now that are wondering what the heck we're talking about, Julie Bogart is like a homeschool guru. She has so many great ways for you to help shift your thinking. Because I know a lot of moms struggle with this. They're like, how can you do that and then think that your kids aren't missing something? So Julie Bogart has shared a bunch of wisdom about how she has been able to really shift the way you think about learning, see the fun and the magic in being together and trusting that process and helping you to see differently too. Like, she has a handwriting curriculum too, and something powerful for me, which I don't know if you found this with her too, but because Julie Bogart's so passionate about writing, she helped me to see like my kids are actually trying to write, but I didn't value it. Like, my daughter was making lists of her names of her stuffed animals, and she was writing a list. She was making a menu of things that they should be eating. And she's only in first grade, but she was doing this. And I normally would be like, oh, what are you doing? Like, we're supposed to be doing our homework. But then because of her, I'm like, she's writing. She's doing the same thing, the mechanics of putting her pen to the paper. She's trying to figure out how to spell things. She's trying to record her thoughts in words on paper. And I'm like, I think normally I wouldn't have valued that as handwriting, as spelling. But because of Julie Bogart's program and her book and everything, it changed the way that I thought about learning.
Yeah, we really love doing poetry tea time.
Us too. I couldn't understand that thing. I want to hear about how you guys do it. But I'm like, we aren't a poetry family. I'm like, I don't understand why everyone's obsessed with this. But then I tried it once and I'm like, okay, this is insanely amazing way to start our day. Like, it's such a different way to start your day in peace and listening to beautiful language that now I really love it. How do you guys do it? Is there any twist?
Ours is more fun. Sometimes we'll do a picnic. They love food. And then sometimes I'll do a theme and I'll go actually to the library, or sometimes I'll just pull out whatever books we actually own, and they go around and they pick. The younger one will just go by the picture and I'll read it for him, and the other ones will read a poem, and it's just fun to have something to talk about over snacks. So yeah, and I don't push it too long, you know, because you can wear it out, but we just, sometimes it'll be funny ones and sometimes seasonal. And I don't do it regularly, but when we do it, then it's more special and memorable.
Yeah, I think I felt a little overwhelmed with, I tried to do it 2 days in a row, and just doing it 2 days in a row was a little bit too much for me, and I felt like it kind of lost its sizzle by trying to do that back to back. It didn't feel as special. So I agree with you. Like, I think doing it once a month as a starting point, and then moving it to maybe every other week, and then if you feel up to doing it every week. But I love that you do it picnic style, because I was just telling my kids we should try going outside and doing this, because then when things spill and crumbs drop, then it's, I can actually not get stressed about that and focus on the fun and not be like, oh, spill, crumbs, you know?
Sometimes we've gone all fancy and like the tablecloth and the teacups, and you know, that made it extra special too.
Yeah, we did. We got a Facebook Marketplace like vintage tea set that came in like a picnic basket, and I was like, oh my gosh, I wish I had this experience when I was a kid.
I know.
I'm like, I'm so jealous of my kids. You guys have like such awesome experiences. So, I mean, speaking of all of this and how it relates to how we feel and doing what works for us, I know you also run two businesses from home while you're also homeschooling. And I know that that is something a lot of homeschool moms reach out to me about and they're concerned about, because they're going to have to continue working from home. And they feel like, how do you even juggle that? Or even if they're not working from home, they just are concerned about how to juggle life's responsibilities with a toddler and a baby. Whatever the extra responsibility is next to homeschooling, they just feel like, whoa, how do you do it? So I'd love to hear your hacks for running two businesses and homeschooling multiple kids.
So it goes by season, and you have to give yourself grace to just accept that. When you're in the middle of having a new baby, the baby is the lesson. That is what your family is focused on right now, and that is fantastic learning. So just accept it and go, or if you're having a struggle.
I need you to say that all over. I need you to say it again for the people in the back who didn't hear that. The baby is the lesson. I read that article and it's so good, but for the listeners who don't get what the heck you're talking about, what does it mean to say that the baby is the lesson? Or like for you, the miscarriage or the difficult time that you walked through, what does it mean for those things to be the lesson?
Because it's learning, and homeschooling is more than just math sheets. It is teaching your children how to learn, how to grow up, to be empathetic, kind, you know, adults when they grow up. And so if your family is going through whatever it is they're going through, or even if it's just daily responsibilities, learning how to do that, how to cooperate, how to live actual life, that is the lesson in itself. That's what we want them to grow up and be able to handle life, not this fake sitting in a classroom just doing worksheets, and then you come out and you're like, I don't know how to live. I don't know how to adult. So whatever you're going,
like, I don't know if homeschoolers are going to be ready for the real world. And I'm like,
they are doing real world every day.
Yeah.
So you have to give yourself grace. But some other tricks is we try to have a strong rhythm. And I go with a rhythm over a schedule because I don't like to be tied to time slots, but just generally knowing the pattern of our day helps alleviate a lot of the whining or frustration or anxiety, and they don't know what's coming next or what they're supposed to be doing. So we tend to do our school type stuff in the mornings, and then in the afternoons is a lot more free time and their projects. Since COVID, we've had a lot more screen time than we used to. That's been an ongoing family discussion over the years, but they know the pattern now. And they're like, oh my gosh, it's 1 o'clock. That's screen time. Let's quickly get everything done. So they've gotten their pattern down now. And it'll likely change once things open up again. But having some kind of rhythm that your family gets used to. So for us with a businesses, we have certain time slots where I've got interviews or I've got clients that I have to deal with. So we work around that. And again, that's real life. They're learning how to run a business. My oldest is now my video editor. So I got him, he's running a kids course with me that I'm running. And he's now in the business. And over the years, we run an electrical business. They all, my middle is so hands-on. He's now learned how to fix clocks for our business. Like, kids at nine, he was like, oh, I'm totally into watching daddy, what he's doing. So we try to have a safe place that they can come to when they were younger, so they can play with some office supplies. Just accept that they're part of the business and try to do some tasks with them around. We have made use of babysitters and daycares in the past. They only tend to last for a short amount of time and they weren't very sustainable for us. I try to do a lot while the youngest was sleeping. So early in the morning or late at night or nap time, or now it's screen time. So when they're distracted is when I, you know, get down to business and get whatever I can done. The rest of it, we try to work around them.
I think for me, I agree with you. I feel like I've learned to be extremely efficient in a short amount of time because I'm like, I only have an hour and a half, but the twins, my twins are almost two, and then my 7 and 9 year old. So I'm like, when my twins are napping, we need to like get on it. Like, let's do all the hard, messy projects. Let's do the green thinking, and you know, let's do whatever it is that you want to do that we normally can't do when the twins are awake. Actually don't know how to do that because they've never had to practice it. They've always been forced into a schedule from school and they've never had to actually manage their own time. So that's awesome that you're incorporating that. And so then how do you work the whole, like, you have the businesses that you're running. What are the businesses that you're doing, just for curiosity?
So my husband is an electrician. We mostly do fire alarm inspections and emergency lighting. I do the office work. We've got an assistant now, so I'm mostly doing the financials, payroll, and the government stuff. And then on my side, I am a parenting and homeschooling coach. So I offer courses, and then I also have content like a blog and a podcast and a YouTube. So I'm doing content as well as clients.
So then you get a lot of people asking you this question about how are you doing this, or
yes, how am I managing? I think a big key was time blocking. So that instead, when I come down in the office, like, my to-do list could be like 10 pages long, and there's the guilt of trying to do the, like, I'm supposed to be homeschooling and the house looks like a mess. So if I know that Monday is blog post day, I don't have to worry about the rest. Like, that's the rest of it's the next day. So for my work, I've tried to separate the big categories to each day of the week. So then I only focus on one thing. I'm trying to delegate a lot with the housework and lower my standards. And also a lot of purging so that there's less mess. So we try to purge a lot. And try to get the kids to help. They know they have to do at least 2 chores a day to help us keep on top of things. And then if I know that the kids are doing school during certain times, then, and I know they're always learning, and I try to do a lot that we can do together. Because then I don't feel like, oh no, I didn't give so-and-so their individual time. When we do that, I spread it out. So it's like, certain days of the week, my oldest will get me for his individual time, and then the next day it's the other child. So I don't feel like I have to do everybody every day.
Oh yeah, when Julie Bulger again, like, I got that permission from her. She's like, you don't have to do all 4 subjects with all your kids every day. You totally have permission to make Mondays be your math day and Tuesdays be your science day, and you can either have all your kids do that one subject for the day and it's like with that subject for the day, or you can just have the kid, you know, plug that one kid into Mondays, like, that's your one-on-one time with them, and your other kid gets to have a free day. And I'm like, why did I even think of that? That's just so crazy. The other thing you alluded to was like loop scheduling, where you kind of have this process of not being behind in anything, or not neglecting anything because you have not a schedule, but you have a loop that you follow in a circle. So it's kind of like, it seems that you get to touch every, all your responsibilities, no matter what comes up in your life, because you have it on a loop that you keep revisiting it. I don't know if I'm explaining it well, but do you
know? No, that totally makes sense. Yeah, and I even had that for our cleaning schedule for a while. I've fallen off the bandwagon. Now it's just like the chalkboard. I write down what the biggest mess is. Let's tackle that. But for a while, when I was organized, I would be like, each room of the house had its own day, so that I knew that at least once a week, things were getting dealt with.
That's pretty brilliant. I love
Yeah. And trying to incorporate all the kids into as much as you can, because there's so much learning with the baking and the art and unit studies and nature studies. I mean, if everyone's doing the same thing at the same time, then that just gets a whole lot more done.
Yeah, I agree. So then, is that what you're doing now? Are you mostly unschooling, or are you doing the unit study approach?
It depends on the season. I would say in the fall we do and winter we do a lot more of the book work, I would say. And I might pull and say, okay, for right now I feel I need more structure, and I'll do more of a Waldorf approach because I already have the curriculum for that. But if the weather's great and it's over the summer, we're way more unschooling. And then the rest of the year, I would say we're mostly project-based for unit studies, but then I try to be consistent with math and language. Like, our math is sort of separate, and we try to be consistent with that.
And so then how do you deal with, I mean, if your kids ever fall behind or they're not up to whatever you thought they'd be up to, how do you deal with that? I mean, especially with the teacher background, because I know a lot of people think, oh, well, if I was a teacher, I could do this. I'm like, I feel like a lot of teachers actually have a hard time separating what they used to know that worked for the classroom. So I wonder, from your point of view, what do you do when you feel like your kids are falling behind?
You really need to work on their mindset. You gotta de-school yourself and get yourself out of that mindset, because in anything in life, we're all at different levels and we all know different things. I mean, do you condemn a person because they can't knit or can't play an instrument? And there are some basics, and I think that's where everyone's fear is around the reading, writing, and math, because those are the big things. If I don't know medieval times and you do, I don't think that's a big deal, you know? So those are the subjects that I love. If that's your thing, please don't shoot me. They are all important, but I think everyone's fear is around certain topics. And it's taken a lot for me to just get over it and not stress. And I think that comes with experience of seeing them develop in their own time. Because a lot of people just push way too young and you all burn out and they end up hating it. But we chose early on to let our boys learn to read at their own pace and in their own way. Like, we totally unschooled the reading. I think my oldest got a bit of instruction because I didn't know what to do at the time, but they just picked it up on their own, and they're so unique from each other. My 12-year-old picked up reading at probably around 6 to 8, and he's always got a book in his hand. My 10-year-old has been slower at that, and I would say more like 8, 9, and even at 10, if he was in school, yeah, he'd be really behind, but there's progress. And that's the key. You see some progress, and that's all you can hope for, is learning how to learn, and they're learning it. It might be slower, but really. And now that we see that they can do that in one area, then I know that they'll pick it up in other things. Now, mine both happen to really enjoy math, so that's not a problem. But the writing, definitely, it's not where it would be in school, but it's the progress. And I love, like, we're going on about Julie so much, but I like that the idea of that what they are thinking is valuable. And so I do a lot of their scribing for them. And I knew that was a struggle for all my male students. I don't mean to stereotype people, but I knew as a teacher, and most of my class were boys, that their ideas and then the mechanics of getting their ideas out was such a struggle for them that we try to separate those two things. Like, if I want them to be writing, then we'll focus on writing. But if I want ideas, then I'll help scribe for them.
Yeah, and it's amazing what happens when you do shift your thinking, because my son also, he's 9 and he hates writing. But when I ask him to dictate something to me, like, he loves football, so I told him, dictate to me like an imaginary Super Bowl where you're the announcer and you're going to tell me, like, I don't know, I really don't even know anything about football, but I'm like, you tell me whatever you would hear in an announcement before the Super Bowl starts. So he starts going off. He goes, welcome to Super Bowl 57. And today we have the New York Giants versus, and he's just going on and on. And I'm just like over here. I'm like, okay, slow down. Like, I'm over here typing. And then he looks at everything I wrote and he's like, I'm like, that's your writing. That's you taking your ideas. And I just typed them out for you. And so then he also started to use the dictation with Siri. And yeah. To describe like Minecraft tutorials of when to use certain weapons. And he looks at everything he's able to accomplish and he feels like what Julie says is like he's experiencing success. He's experiencing what it's like to conquer something versus before he's just like, I'm so bad at writing. My writing's so sloppy. And he's just, all he can see is what he's not able to do and he's feeling defeated. So I love that you know, kind of changed the way that you were trained. And also took into account some of your trainings, which is you knew that boys were going to have a hard time. And so you took a step back and you tried something different. And so I just love that. And you touched on de-schooling. And I know what de-schooling is, but I always love to hear other people who have done it, what it looked like for them. So I'm curious, and also for our listeners who don't even know what de-schooling is, if you can touch on what it means and how you applied it.
So for me, de-schooling was different because my kids had never been to school. So for families who are pulling their kids from school, I would say it is learning to be at home again and live life sort of like an extended summer, really, or a Saturday afternoon. But there's a big shift, because if you're pulling your kids from school, they were always seeing their teacher as the teacher and they're used to that school mindset. And here all of a sudden, mom's trying to be teacher, that you're mom, you're a different person. So it's getting used to that mom is now also my teacher, and that you got to totally get out of that school mindset. And for me personally, it was just that. I was so ingrained with teacher thinking and that school way of thinking. I had to do a lot of reading from a variety of different educational methods, as well as what learning really is and what we valued for our family. I recommend journaling too, just sort of thinking, why are we homeschooling? What are our main goals for our kids? Why are we even doing this? Write down your fears, write down what you're excited about, and always come back to that when you're doubting as well. Because it kind of relights that fire as to why did I get into this, especially on those bad days. But take time to actually think about what are your expectations. And so for me, de-schooling was rewiring my brain and learning about how kids learn. And for my kids, our kids didn't have to de-school. But they did a little when we switched to unschooling, because then they had more permission to do their own thing. And I was like, I'm not requiring as much of you. I want you to learn for the love of learning. I want you to take on more of this yourself. It's your brain, not mine. I can't do it for you.
That's so powerful to think about that too, that even when you're switching between methods within homeschooling, it can be hard to be like, okay, this isn't working for us. Or like how you said, you were unschooling and you felt like you swing into that that area of neglect. And then you have to be willing to admit, like, okay, we tried this, it's not fitting our family. And like you said too, about feeling like you're not doing your best, like what you're not meeting your goals that you had for your kids. It's like, I think as moms, we need to admit when things aren't working for us. And even though you spent the money on the curriculum, it's okay. It's okay to go ahead and sell that curriculum, admit that it's not working, your kid hates it, you're having to force them to do it, they're crying. I mean, there's certain signs that you just know things aren't working. So I don't know what those things were for you when you realized this isn't working for us, but I'd love for you to share that for anyone who feels like, how do you know when something isn't working versus a kid that just doesn't want to do it?
Yeah, that's a tricky one, especially when you've put money into it. We always gave ourselves a time frame and said, look, we're going to try this for this number of months. And I would go with months over weeks because it does take time to settle into a new method or a new curriculum. But even just 3 to 6 months and give it a go and then reassess at the end. Do we enjoy this? Are we learning? Or has this been a constant torture for 3 months? And then you can also tell if a kid just doesn't want to do their work, they're usually not wanting to do more than one curriculum or more than one subject. That's more of a character issue rather than a curriculum issue for that area.
I agree. That's such an important distinction because I was going through that too with my son, just not wanting to do certain things. And I was like, how do I know that this isn't just like a developmental / obedience issue / like what you said, character issue, versus like, is this the wrong curriculum? I feel like you're right. It's so tricky to know that. And maybe like what you're saying, is this behavior something you're seeing across subjects? Because then maybe it's the environment, maybe emotionally they're going through something that they haven't shared with you, or it's just a lot for them to process the change of coming home to be homeschooled. Maybe they're missing friends, and there's just so many different issues that it can be that I feel like it is important to listen to your mama voice that's inside that's telling you, like, this isn't working. What is it? Is it the curriculum? Like, can we pick something else that you get to choose? And I feel like that's really awesome. So my question for you as we start to wrap up is, you know, if you knew back then when you started out what you know now, that you'd find your way, that your kids would learn, if you knew back then what you know now, would you have done anything differently?
Yes and no, because I think that the journey has brought us to where we are. So I can't imagine where we'd been if we hadn't gone through the struggles. But what I think I would do is waste so much less energy worrying. I would have just shut out the other voices. There's no homeschool police coming to see if you're doing a particular method right. Like, so just relax. It's your family. You do you. Trust it and enjoy it because life is too short. Find the joy in parenting. Know that they're going to learn in spite of you. So they're going to learn something, whether it's what you want them to or not.
Right,
you can't help
stop it.
You can't stop them from learning. So why stress and worry and color code and have all these schedules that aren't, if that's not you, then don't do it. Don't waste your time on all the outside voices.
Yeah, I agree. Because Julie Bogart, she mentions that. She's like, you know, I used to feel so badly that my family wasn't a music family, or that we didn't appreciate the great arts, or that we weren't a nature people, or we weren't sports people. And she was like, but what if I would have just leaned into who we actually were, which is, for her, they were really big into literature and writing. So she was like, yeah. I remember her saying that she really leaned into what is the natural desires, passions, experiences that we have as a family. What are our unique strengths? And let's lean into that. Let's share our passions with our kids. Let's let our kids share their passions with us, and let's lean into it and stop feeling like we have to be good at everything, you know? So I don't know if you can relate to that at all, feeling like, oh, why aren't we interested in this or that?
Yeah, I get that all the time. I know what my boys are passionate about. And so when I feel guilty that, you know, we aren't as musical and we aren't as this and we aren't as that, I try to remind myself that my job is just to give them a taste, give them like a buffet, give them an introduction. If they take off with it, great, we'll go into that. But at least I could say, I introduced you to this, we tried it out, and if we go further with it, great. And if we don't, then they can do that when they're an adult. Yeah, they can go back and build. My job is to teach them to learn how to learn. And if they don't learn how to do something specific when I'm with them, then they can go teach it to themselves. So my company is called Joyful Mud Puddles. And because it encompasses parenting and my boys, and that's actually, you can see it, there's a picture behind me of a kid in a puddle. Life with children, it's joyful, it's messy, you got to be brave enough to jump in and join the fun. And so that's what I want parents to do. I want that to be the words of my life. It's messy, but it's fun. And so I am a parenting and homeschooling coach. I help homeschooling families with learning, like first new homeschoolers, setting up what is it like, connect me with the right resources. For experienced homeschoolers who are looking to either shift or they're struggling in a certain area, knowing who they can talk to or work through those problems. I also create lessons and units because, I mean, I'm just a Pinterest fiend, so I can help with actually working that out. And then on the parenting side, which is so closely tied to homeschooling, because you can't be at home without parenting, I do a lot of parent coaching. I have a course that I offer for parents who want to work on their gentle parent, respectful, positive parenting, so without the punishments and bribes and rewards. So I offer a course in that as well as on my blog and everything. And then I also offer emotion coaching for children. And that's a project that my son and I are working on. So instead of always having adults tell kids how to calm down or telling them to take a deep breath, why not actually see a kid doing it? And it's sometimes messy with my four-year-old because then you see what it's actually like in real life, and things that are working for my children, they're sharing that with others. So I have the blog, the podcast, and the YouTube channel, and I'm on every social media, and it's all Joyful Mud Puddles, all one word. Awesome.
And then is your coaching platform also, they can contact you from there, or do you have a separate coaching website?
So if you go to joyfulmudpuddles.com and click on my services, that lists all the services, and under resources, it has the links to my resources. So everything's at one page. The course is run through Member Vault, but you access it, like you, I would connect with you, you'd get an email, and I'd set you up, because we also have a Facebook group as well. And that's, if you go to Joyful Mud Puddles, you can find my private support group. There you go.
Yeah, so you'll get them in the show notes and you'll be able to reach out to Megan and get some of her advice and support, because like I said, moms really need to know when to put their hand in the air and say, I need help, I don't know how to do this, let me reach out to somebody who's been there, done that, and get some help. So thank you so much, Megan, for doing this with me today. It's been so fun to talk to you.
It's been a pleasure. I really appreciate it.